Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine, and today is Free Advice Friday, the day that I take your calls and answer your questions. The number to call, if you'd like to speak with me, is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. You can call in and ask me questions or share your opinion or share your experience. Everything benefits the listeners who are interested in hearing what you have to say. So feel free to call in. I wanted to remind you all of my new book, Cliff Edge Road, the Memoir. It's getting great reviews. People are loving it. They tell me they can't put it down, which is a great thing. I have created a book trailer it's on YouTube. So if you look up Randy Fine, Cliff Edge Road, you can watch the book trailer and it'll give you kind of a overview of what the book is about. Let me think of what other housekeeping I wanted to share with you. Oh, I hope you all had a great new year. We're all looking forward to great things in 2020 and a lot of healing. I really hope for that for all of you. What else did I want to talk about? I think that's pretty much it for the housekeeping. We do have a caller, so I'm going to see, I'm going to let this caller come in and let's see what he or she has to say. Good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, I was wondering, are you doing, like, readings?
I don't do readings. I'm not psychic, but this is what I do is narcissistic personality disorder abuse, and that's, you know, basically what I'm talking about. So have you had any experience with that?
I'm not sure if it is. That's what I was, I would like to listen, like, if there's, like, if they purposely do stuff to make you feel down, but they don't, but they're very calm, they don't talk to you.
Yes, well, it sounds like it, and there's a lot of information on my website, randyfine.com, R-A-N-D-I, but you can keep listening, and you know, if you don't have any questions, you certainly can listen. So I'm going to put you back on hold so you can listen to the show. Okay.
Okay. And if I have a question, I'll hit the one again, but I'll take it off now. I'll just listen.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
So today I wanted to talk about child abuse through parental alienation. And the reason I want to talk about that today is because lately all my clients are going through this in some way, shape, or form. And it is the most tragic thing ever. So it's not bad enough to be suffering the abuse of having a relationship with a narcissist. Now, these parents are being tortured for having left the narcissist. And the best way to torture a targeted parent is to turn their children against them. So this is something that happens all over the world. excuse me. I have people in every corner of the world who have suffered parental alienation. The problem with this is that the court systems do not recognize it. They are so overwhelmed. And when the docket is set up for the day, each person may get maybe 30 minutes. And basically, the judges are swayed by who represents themselves as the best. So when a targeted parent goes into court and they're upset and they show it and they're nervous and they're anxious, and the alienating parent is provoking them with all the things that they know will upset them, lies and just saying terrible things, when the targeted parent reacts, they are the ones that look unstable. So often, judges will rule in behalf of the narcissist, who in many cases is the alienating parent. And the good parent loses. And I have people who have been going through this for years and years and years. Not only that, but the children are turned against the good parent. Not only are they turned against the good parent, they develop a hatred for the good parent. This is a parent who used to love them, and they used to love back, who had a great relationship. Often, the parent was so devoted that their entire life was based on raising these children. Now the children are believing lies that are told to them. They're very confused, and this is a very severe form of child abuse. So not only are the parents suffering, the children are suffering. And this is a lifetime sentence. What's done to these children, they will never, ever recover from, unless someone intervenes. Now, there are tactics that can be used for the alienated parent. But I recommend, and I actually have a YouTube video up about what to do before you leave the narcissist. It's very important if you're considering leaving your narcissistic spouse or partner, it's very important if you have not gone yet and you have children to be strategic before you go. I can't emphasize that enough. There are strategies that can be used, and the outcome of the separation and divorce in behalf of the children is dependent on this strategy. We never want to let our abuser know that we know what they're doing. That is our strategy. But we can use everything that the abuser does to us, we can do the same things back, and it works really, really well. But if you leave your abuser and you have children, before you prepare, before you get the strategy, I help people go through this process. And the, like I said, the outcome is completely different when they strategize before they leave. But what often happens is if they get exasperated, walk out the door, take the children, things are not going to work out very well for them. They're going to have to do a lot of damage control. And that's pretty hard to do. So I recommend, if you are in this kind of position, that you contact me and let me help you strategize this so that you can get the best possible outcome. This is a call-in show. The number is 424-220-1801. I would love to hear what you have to say. There is a term, I'm actually in the process of writing an article about this. There is a term coined by Dr. Stephen Miller called pathological enmeshment. And in pathological enmeshment, the parent, the alienating parent, creates this unhealthy enmeshment with the child to the point where they deprive the child of their independence and individuality. And so the child really loses who they are. They don't really have the same identity they had when they were within the family unit. And this is a way of coercion and control by the parent. What happens is very much like a cult situation. Children who are subjected to pathological enmeshment suffer nearly the same coercion and manipulation that cult members do, and the outcomes are very similar. So in both scenarios, there must be, and this actually doesn't just apply to children. This applies to anyone who is in a relationship with a narcissistic personality disordered individual. So in the situation of a cult and also narcissistic abuse, there must be deference or obedience between the members, but it is not based on the goodwill of the members. These individuals learn that the consequences of disobedience to this authoritative figure or this abusive figure may be harmful to them. We have a caller. Let me take this caller. Oh. Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Did you have a question or a comment to make?
Yes. Hi. I just happened to call in. Was just waiting to listen to the show. I don't know the topic you have today.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. I'm going to put you back on hold and you can listen. I'm talking about parental alienation. I'm talking about the cult-like situation that exists between the narcissist and the abused. So I'll put you back on hold, okay?
All right.
Thank you for listening. Okay, so I was saying, in both situations, there has to be obedience between the members, but it's not based on goodwill. The individuals in this cult or abuse situation learn that the consequences of the disobedience may be harmful to them, so they are forced into submission. Also, in both scenarios, the authoritative figure or the narcissist dehumanizes the individual, their target, by viewing him or her entirely from the perspective of the narcissist or the cult leader's own needs. So, as you can see, there's very, very strong similarities between the two. And if you are involved in a narcissistic abuse relationship, you may feel like you're in a cult So another thing is the lack of appropriate boundaries. And these are characteristic of what I was calling parental pathological enmeshment. So this is also characteristic of cults. So in parental pathological enmeshment, only the parent is qualified to make decisions for the child. In a cult, the leader insists that followers obey a myriad of rules with the message that they cannot measure up spiritually without him. So in this pathological enmeshment, parental alienation, there's all these different terms for what happens when a child is taken under mind control. So they learn that they cannot exist. They feel like they cannot exist without the parent or the cult leader. In both parental pathological enmeshment and cults, all the individual's needs must be fulfilled within the controlled environment, both situations. In both situations, victims become reliant on the perpetrator to control every aspect of their emotional and psychological lives. They cannot make even the smallest decisions. They lose this ability to make small decisions. They become reliant on being told what to eat, when to sleep, how to dress, what to say. Both inner worlds and outer worlds are completely dominated. In both parental pathological enmeshment and in cults, outside contacts are limited or restricted because the parent or the cult leader fears that the outside world will give information that causes the victims to question the control. They don't want any outside information because they want to have full control over the victims. They isolate and condition their targets to view outsiders as threatening or dangerous. It becomes an us versus them environment. Children who have previously loved, trusted, and adored the other parent now see the parent as unloving, untrustworthy, and dangerous. In both scenarios, the rules are conveyed through reward and punishment, intermittent good, bad behavior. And if you are in the midst or have suffered narcissistic abuse, you will notice that there's times where you look at your abuser and you say, well, maybe they're not as bad as I thought they were. Because there are times when they do good things and they're nice. But this is strategic on their part. This is supposed to throw you off and confuse you so that you don't figure out how severely you are being abused. So they'll abuse you and abuse you and abuse you. And maybe when you pull away, you start to pull away, you get quiet, they get afraid that maybe you're catching on, and they do good things for you. And I can't tell you, I mean, some of the stories that I hear about what happens when during this good reinforcement period, I mean, they will give you everything that you want all of a sudden. But the thing about the narcissist is they can't do this for very long. This is not their nature. This is a strategy. And the strategy, they can only hold on to this good part for a short period of time before the abuse cycle begins. And if you're familiar at all with the domestic abuse cycle, it's very similar. You know, there's this reward and punishment and reward and punishment. There's the honeymoon phase, and it throws the target completely off balance. And the worst thing of all, and now I'm going to talk about the pathological enmeshment and cults. Victims are made to believe that the parent or leader's control demonstrates how much they love them, when in fact the only love is the love the grandiose parent or leader has for themselves and the animosity they have towards others. I was talking, if you've called in late, I was talking about many of the clients that I am getting lately are suffering from parental alienation issues. These are parents who have given their life for their children. Now they leave the narcissist, and the narcissist brainwashes the children and turns them completely against the good parent. And this is the most torture you can put a good parent through. Everything about this is counterintuitive. So in order to get the children to open back up, if it hasn't gone on for too long, there has to be counterintuitive strategies. So the things that you would normally do in this situation by instinct or intuition are going to be completely wrong. Narcissistic abuse is counterintuitive to everything we know, to all our logic. There is no logic. And one must completely understand the workings of the narcissist in order to understand how to deal with them. What we don't want to do, the worst thing we can ever do with a narcissist is to share our feelings and show our emotions. Because for a narcissist, that is food. They live off of that. They thrive on our emotions and our pain. And when we sit down and explain to them how they made us feel, this is entertainment. They've gone to a Broadway show. They love hearing this. It just fuels them more to abuse you. It also gives them the exact way to abuse you. When you tell them how you feel, they know exactly how to prey on you. So we never want to reveal our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions. And we don't want to show reactions to anything. Narcissists will provoke us. They provoke us to the point where we react, because then they remain calm and we're the crazy one. And often they'll call the police. We're acting crazy. We're throwing things. You know, we've been pushed to our limit and we're freaking out. And the narcissist is sitting there quiet and smiling. This is what they want us to do. They want to provoke us to the point where we react and we look like the crazy one. So when you understand this, and it's hard not to react because they push the buttons. They know exactly what to push. You know, in cases where if you are the child of a narcissist, adult child of a narcissistic parent, your parent has been learning where your buttons are for years and years and years. They know exactly how to do it. If you're in a relationship with a narcissist, a romantic relationship or a marriage, they have interviewed you on your first or, you know, first few meetings with them before you ever got involved with them. They interview you. They find out where all your hot buttons are, because they are the perfect partner. They listen. They want to know everything about you. They want to know what your hopes and dreams are. They want to know what happened to you in your childhood, because they want to help fix it. And you spill your guts to these people, and they sit there and they listen. And what they're doing is taking notes. It's deliberate. They're taking notes. And then what they do is they get you psychologically addicted to them through getting your endorphins firing, so that you can't even think straight. But understand that narcissists know how to push your buttons. And what makes them crazy is when they cannot get a reaction from you. So the last thing you want to do is react. This is a call-in show. We still have about 30 minutes. The number is 424-220-1801. I'd love to hear what you have to say. It pains me dealing with so many parental alienation situations. Parents have nowhere to turn. The good parents have nowhere to turn. They are isolated. They are lonely. The children are rejecting their texts. They're rejecting their emails. They're rejecting their phone calls. And it's the door is shut on these parents. And it is so, so tragic. So let's see. I definitely want to talk about what you want to hear about. So I'm trying to So I also want to talk about the mental health profession. I had a guest on the other day. He wrote a book about emotional predators. It was a very good conversation. And he classifies emotional predators as the cluster B disorders, but also, what is the other one? I'll think of it in a second. Paranoia disorder, personality disorder. So he adds that to this collection of cluster B disorders that can, you know, the empathy devoid so-called human beings that look and walk, look like us, walk like us, and talk like us, but are nothing like us. So anyway, he was saying that the mental health profession is based on a very outdated model. And this model is based on helping people come to terms with their experiences, their life, having insight into who they are. And that insight is supposed to bring them out and help them. When you go to a therapist or a psychiatrist and you have been narcissistically abused, there you have no responsibility in this. You have no insight into this. And to be asked to look within and see what your part was in this abuse is a huge, huge slap in the face. It's degrading. But therapists do not. Now, there are some out there who have stepped outside of the box and have recognized this pattern and sort of know what to do. Some know what to do. Many will tell you that they do know what to do, but they don't. They're using the same protocol that has been used for probably 100 years, maybe a little bit less. I don't know specifically. But so you think that you're going to someone who has a master's degree or a doctorate in mental health. Just because they have a degree does not mean they know how to help you. So there are people like myself scattered around who do know how to help you. I do. I use a very, very different approach. And it works really quickly. Very, very quickly. So I can get you out of this pain and out of this confusion in a very short time. The parental alienation situations take a lot longer because we're dealing with court systems and we're dealing with constant manipulation and we're dealing with pain and parents who can't move forward because they're being blocked at every angle. that takes longer. But if you're in, you know, suffering from narcissistic abuse, I can free you in a very short amount of time. I do it all the time. I love when I graduate my clients. When you go to psychotherapy, you are in it for a long haul, and you probably will not get to the core of your issue because they're not trained to deal with this. They don't recognize it. And if you go into couples counseling, they'll ask you why you're doing what you're doing to your spouse, because your spouse will blame you for everything that's ever happened in the marriage. So couples therapy does not help at all. Family therapy does not help at all. This is an individual thing where the abused person, the targeted person, must get help. They have to regain who they were or find a self that they've never had. That's what this is about. It's also about self-love. Self-love is the core of all healing from narcissistic abuse, because when you become just completely protective over who you are, no matter what that is, when you can accept who you are, when you can forgive yourself for the choices that you've made, and you decide that you matter and nobody's going to change that, that's when you begin to heal, when you develop a self. You know, I find it's really interesting. I give people permission to be who they are. And that sounds like such a ridiculous thing, such a simple thing. But it's not. Because when we've been abused this way, we are sizing ourselves up against other people. And we feel inferior. We feel stupid. We feel guilty. We feel less than. We've been told that we're less than. And embracing the fact that we are okay is the most foreign thought ever. And I've had people come to me who have been told they're not okay for years and years and years, and they believe it. I look at them and I say, wow, there's nothing wrong with you. And I'm not lying. I'm looking at the person and I'm seeing, as I see them, there is nothing wrong with the person except that they've been told that there's something wrong with them. So accepting who you are on all levels, accepting that maybe the career you've chosen is not really the best one for you. It doesn't feel right. It's not who you are. You've done it to please other people. You've done it because it looks right for society. Whatever that is, whatever the choices that you've made that you're holding up against other people that are making you feel inferior, it's important to release that and embrace your identity, your individuality, who you are in this world. If you think about the world or the universe as a jigsaw puzzle, and no two pieces are alike in this jigsaw puzzle, but you need every piece to finish the picture. We are all these different size, different shaped pieces that create the whole. So whoever we are, whatever we are, whatever we choose to do in our lives, as long as we're not hurting anybody, it's okay. No matter how quirky you are, no matter how strange people think you are, so what? It doesn't matter. But when you can embrace who you are at all levels, that's when the healing truly, truly happens, because you can see more clearly what has happened to you, what has been done to you, and you can see how hard it was for you to make this change to become yourself. narcissists deprive us of a self. They deprive us of an individuality. They want us to enmesh with them. They want to take over and control who we are. And the reason they do that is because of narcissistic supply. And narcissistic supply to the narcissist is like heroin to the junkie. They can't exist without it. Without it, they go through withdrawal. And withdrawal for the narcissist means that they have to feel the self-loathing that they've hidden through the false self. So when they don't have narcissistic supply, they go into this really dark, dark place, and they don't want to go there. So they'll do anything to get attention, adoration, admiration, you know, any of those things. They'll do anything. And in order to assure at least one supply of it, they take hostages. We call them relationships. They're not relationships. Relationships are two people working towards the same goal. Narcissists don't have relationships. They control. They give nothing. They take everything. So it's not a relationship. It's a hostage situation. And it's just like a cult or any kind of government, armed forces or something like that, hostage situation. It is the same thing. The tactics used, the manipulations used are exactly the same. The mind control is exactly the same. So this is very, very severe abuse. Probably the worst kind of abuse that can happen to one, to a person. Emotional, psychological, mental abuse. And nobody else recognizes it because it happens behind closed doors. So we are changed. We are changed by what is done to us. And what's really interesting about it is that it's done to us on a unconscious level. Narcissists have a way of doing this where we don't even know what's being done to us. So we are thinking that we're thinking normally. We're thinking that our decisions are our decisions. They feel normal. We feel normal. And we think we're thinking clearly. We don't realize we've been programmed because it's on such a deep level and such a subtle level, and it's done so stealthily over a period of time. These people are brilliant, brilliant. Their minds work in a way ours never could. But we are not the same at all. And when we look at them and think that they're processing thoughts the way we're processing thoughts, that's where we get hung up. Narcissists are nothing like us. Nothing like us. They're not driven by the same thoughts. They don't process things the same way. All they do is lie and manipulate because they must have narcissistic supply. And besides the hostage situation, or the, as we call them, relationships, they must have other sources. So in the case of romantic relationships or marriages, there will be cheating. There will be other people because narcissists must have more than one source. So whether you think they're doing it or not, they're doing it. I've never seen a situation where they're not. But they're very good at it, very good at hiding it. Maybe they're not going out, but they may be doing maybe online cheating or something like that. They're doing something to get another source because your source is not going to be enough. And your source is going to dry up because over a period of time, as they abuse you, it stops being fun for them. You know, because you get to, when a narcissist has abused someone for a long period of time, that person becomes a puppet. They're no longer fun. They don't challenge, you know. There's no excitement. There's no drama. The person just, like a drone, they just go along with everything, like a Stepford wife. So it stops being fun, and they have to find other people. In the situation of families, like parents who are narcissistic, they will have so many sources of narcissistic supply. It's really interesting, and I'll tell you a little bit of a personal story about me. I was my mother's favorite. I was her golden child. She gazed at me as if she had created a perfect specimen. And I had two sisters who were severely emotionally abused. It was just such an extreme, and she never tried to hide it. But it got to a point where, and I was never comfortable. I had a lot of problems in my life because I was objectified. There was nothing, she never developed my inside. It was all about my outside and how I could please. So, where was I going with this? I'm trying to think where I was going with this. Okay, got it. So, when I was about 42 years old, it took me that long to wake up and see that all the dysfunction in my life was rooted in my childhood, because my childhood was so darn dysfunctional. But when I pulled away from my mother so that I could go through a healing, she replaced me. And she told me my whole life, what would I do without you? I can never live without you. And the second I stepped away, she replaced me. So narcissists will, they're very resourceful. If you think they're out of money, guess again. They have sources for money. They have sources for everything that they need. They're brilliant that way. I don't know if this person has called in before. Let me see. Were you just reconnecting, or were you calling in to talk to me? Hello? Are you there? Okay, put it back on hold. Okay, so anyway, as I was saying, they are resourceful. So I hear people say, oh, I'm so worried about them. You know, my elderly parents, they have no income, they have no this and no that. You know, I have to be involved in their life, I have to help them. If you were a fly on the wall and you saw what was going on when you were not around, you would be astounded because they have an entire crew of people who are doing for them what they need. But they'll tell you they need you to do it. They're still getting it done. Trust me. This is, you know, this has been working with this disorder and the people who have been abused by it is just, it's heartbreaking, but it's fascinating at the same time that these people actually exist. And as I was talking to my guest the other day, the one who wrote the book about emotional predators, I asked him how prevalent he thought this was in society. And when I say society, I'm not talking about United States, I'm talking about the world, society in the world. He said that he could safely say that 10% of the population are emotional predators, but it's more like 20 to 25, but he can't safely say that. And I agree with that. So in my experience, at least one out of every five people I talk to, this will resonate with them. Either they're in a relationship and they don't realize it, or they know someone and they go, that is exactly what's happening to, you know, Jim and John. That's exactly what's happening. Oh my gosh. Or that was my parents' relationship. Or, oh my gosh, you know, I have an aunt or an uncle that was like this, you know. So at least 1 in 5 people I talk to will be able to relate to narcissistic abuse. And as my guest said, emotional predators, because he widens that range beyond narcissistic personality disorder abuse. But he says that all emotional predators are narcissistic. So it is at the core of every single one of them. These people walk among us. It is epidemic. They are everywhere we go, and we cannot spot them. And they have the advantage because we don't look for this. While I'm talking about that, let me just see. This caller called back in. Let me just see if you have a question. Did you have a question for me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hi.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Patricia.
Okay. Hi,
yes.
Patricia.
Can you hear me?
Yes. I can.
I was holding before. Briefly, I was just listening to all the turns, and I mean, it's all just fiery. I just recently got out of an unintended narcissist relationship. I even don't want to call it that. It started in 2016, and
okay.
It was with a musician, an older person, and long story short, I never had that type of experience, and now that I'm thinking back at it, probably my mother was a narcissist from what you were describing. But anyway, and I'm here in Ohio, Cleveland, and it's just been difficult. Period, even though I was born and raised here, but it's just from a karmic standpoint and energy, it's just been very negative and so on and so forth. And this person, he was, and it looked like on the outside that I was chasing him. I would just go to his concerts. He's a musician. I felt this pull to be going, and I stopped. And I got my power back. But I mean, it took me, 2 years? And then, but what he would do, you know, and all this telepathic, you know, talking. And I mean, until I can really understand what was going on, and I was, calling these little psychics through this Blog Talk Radio, and of course, most of them, they weren't, you know, they were just too busy blaming me and blah, 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 you know, you're in control, da, 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 da. And it's like, okay.
Right.
And they're on their spiritual pillow. And I mean, just the hateful little things that he would do. And of course, he has celebrity here, and he's an older man. He's in his 70s. And I mean, the, you know, celebrity and, you know, that he has, and he's married and all that. And his wife had begun to see me at some of these performances. And it's, but of course, you know, she knows what he is because she's probably one too. And, but just the how he manipulated and controlled me was in my head, and I still get a little irritated at that. He wanted attention. Obviously, he wanted sex and my energy.
Right.
And, as I said, I stopped going. And, you know, he was on some social media. And, of course, he would be giving advice to students because he teaches as well. And
well,
what he would do was, you know, just all, you know, so I just stopped all that. And he still, you know, wants to be trying to connect, you know, playing music or other people's music. And so on. And it's like, I just, part of me wants to punch him.
Right.
You know, but it's like, you know what? And he has some type of open heart surgery, whatever, last year, and it didn't kill him. But it's like, you know, he's still the same person. And it's like, you know what,
I did not have any intimate relation, nothing, just going to the concert. But I mean, that control he had on me. And it was, and I don't blame myself, you know, and at the same
you
time,
don't.
I
That's
was
good.
Sexual harassment with other males. He teaches at the college I used to go to in a different department. And some of these males were just bullying me, harassing me, and then, you know, sexually harassing me. And, you know, and I never got any help with administration. I didn't even mention the sexual harassment because they weren't trying to help me with that. They were just busy violating my civil and educational rights. So it was like it was all I can do, as I say, to keep my head above water. And so it was a very painful experience. I keep to myself, and I mean, you know, I pray prayers and do actions, what I call protective shields around me.
Okay.
But it's
very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, and I mean, it was for me like just being thrown against mountains and then, you know, down into ocean. You know, somebody's holding your head down there. Okay, pull it up. You know, are you going to do what we say? You know, down again. That. And
yes.
If I write out what I've just told you, and I've only just told you a minor, I would be looked at. I mean, it would seem like I made all this up. But it's like, look, I've done nothing wrong. And so it's like, you know what?
Right.
And I'm just focused on, you know, obviously moving forward in my life and moving on out of this town.
Okay.
And,
let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Do you feel like, because this is very traumatic and it does cause PTSD, do you feel like you have triggers, and do you feel like you're still, you still have some anxiety left over from this?
Probably just a bit, but also let me preference, and I'm not going to go into my whole life story.
Yeah, we only have a few minutes.
Right. I dealt with, I've been sexually abused, raped repeatedly.
Okay.
And from that, and I never said anything. And I kept silence until I just stopped all that, because I just had to do the healing work, and it started causing other health issues. My parents abandoned and rejected me. One did it physically, one emotionally. So when this narcissist, I interacted with him, now I understand what I thought and what it may look like. It was supposedly love. It was not. It was that abandonment and rejection that I had not resolved. And I'm working to resolve that.
Okay. So there's a couple things I wanted to say to you before we end, you know, because your story is tragic. It's awful what you've been through, and it does set you up to be preyed on. It does. When we go through these kind of things in childhood, we sort of wear this, I don't know, there's something about us that predators just can smell. They can sense it on us. You've been through a lot. I also understand the psychic attacks I've experienced with my clients. I've had a few clients who were psychically attacked by their predator. I've had ones who were spiritually manipulated. You know, so I've dealt with all these things, and it is absolutely real. So there's nothing that you're saying that I would question or doubt. And that's what I was talking about before, about, you know, when you get help, you want to be with somebody who's not going to shame you, who's going to understand you. But I do recommend that you try to work with me at least a few times, because this stuff that's there, you can process it on a conscious level, but the unconscious stuff, you can't possibly get to. So, and I can get to that very quickly and free you up so you don't have to suffer. A lot of the things, like you're saying, the isolation and stuff like that is very typical, very common after you've been mm-hmm. through something like this. A lot of us isolate.
Yeah. I've isolated all my life. I mean, I've been a loner.
Okay. Yeah. And because of your childhood, chances are you are an empath and you're very sensitive to energies. Yes. So that sets you up for all that. I don't know if you've read my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind. It's a great reference book for all of this, but I talk about the empath aspect of narcissistic or, you know, emotional child abuse. So, and it makes you even more sensitive as you walk through life. So I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing. You can email me if you're interested at loveyourlife@randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com. I charge very little and I work very fast and I don't want you to hurt. So if you're ready or when you're ready, mm-hmm. contact me. It's not going to be a lifetime of dealing with it. We can get it out of you really quickly. So anyway, thank you again for calling. I appreciate it. Everyone else that's listening appreciates you sharing. I have to close the show now.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for calling in. So that was good because you got to hear a lot of what someone, you know, has gone through personally. You're all going through it. Every story is important, and I'm a great listener. the patterns are very much the same, but I'm a great listener. And I know you have to talk. You need to talk. You've got to get this out. Nobody's listening to you. I will listen to you. I will guide you. I will steer you. I promise. One session with me and you won't believe the validation and support that you will feel once and for all in your life. So you can either go to my website, randyfine.com, and go to the services page and connect with, make an appointment there, or you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com, and I'd love to work with you and get you through this. I'm trying to heal the world one person at a time. Anyway, the show is over. I must end it. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.